मनस्तु शत्रुत्वे
मनस्तु शत्रुत्वे
वर्तेतात्मैव शत्रुवः
वर्तेतात्मैव शत्रुवः
बन्धुरात्मात्मनस्तस्य
बन्धुरात्मात्मनस्तस्य
येनात्मैवात्मना जितः अनात्मनस्तु शत्रुत्वे वर्तेतात्मैव शत्रुवत्। बन्धुरात्मात्मनस्तस्य येनात्मैवात्मना जितः अनात्मनस्तु शत्रुत्वे वर्तेतात्मैव शत्रुवत्। बन्धुरात्मात्मनस्तस्य येनात्मैवात्मना जितः अनात्मनस्तु शत्रुत्वे वर्तेतात्मैव शत्रुवत्। लेडीज,
बन्धुरात्मात्मनस्तस्य
येनात्मैवात्मना जितः अनात्मनस्तु शत्रुत्वे वर्तेतात्मैव। बन्धुः, फ्रेंड, आत्मा, द माइंड, आत्मनः, ऑफ द लिविंग एंटिटी, तस्य, ऑफ हिम, येन, बाय होम, आत्मा, द माइंड, एव, सर्टेनली, आत्मना, बाय द लिविंग एंटिटी, जितः, कॉन्कर्ड, अनात्मनः, of one who has failed to control the mind, to, but, shatrutve, because of enmity, varteta, remains, atma eva, the very mind, shatruvat, as an enemy. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. For him who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. Purport. The purpose of practicing Eightfold Yoga is to control the mind in order to make it a friend in discharging the human mission. Unless the mind is controlled, the practice of yoga for show is simply a waste of time. One who cannot control his mind lives always with the greatest enemy, and thus his life and its mission are spoilt. The constitutional position of the living entity is to carry out the order of the superior. As long as one's mind remains an unconquered enemy, one has to serve the dictations of lust, anger, avarice, illusion, etc. But when the mind is conquered, one voluntarily agrees to abide by the dictation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated within the heart of everyone as Paramatma. Real yoga practice entails meeting the Paramatma within the heart and then following his dictation. For one who takes to Krishna consciousness directly, perfect surrender to the dictations of the Lord follows automatically. Om Ajnana Timirandasya ज्ञानांजन शलाखया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबन्धुर्जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे बृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये। वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। बंधुर आत्मात्मनस्तस्य येनात्मैवात्मना जितः अनात्मनस्तु शत्रुत्वे वर्तेतात्मैव शत्रुवत्। फॉर हिम हु हैज कॉन्कर्ड द माइंड इज द बेस्ट ऑफ फ्रेंड्स, बट फॉर वन हु हैज फेल्ड टू डू सो हिज माइंड विल रिमेन द ग्रेटेस्ट enemy. We see in this material world there are certain situations, certain objects which has dual purposes. Like for example, this door. Now, this door can be used in two ways. What are the two ways the door can be used? To come in and to go out. The same door can be used to come in this room and the same door can be used to go out of this room. Like coming to London, we took this flight. And this flight was a little delayed, so passengers were waiting. So they were becoming anxious to get into the flight. And we could see the flight is the same. The door of the flight is the same. But in Bombay, people were anxious to get into. And then as the flight took off, it was a little more late. So then they were anxious to get off the plane. The same plane, the same door, the same passengers. But the situation was such that in Bombay they were anxious to get in. The Heathrow Airport they were anxious to get out. So we see situations in this material world are sometimes like this, having dual purposes or dual utilities. And we can take so many examples like money or time or whatever resources we have, this physical body, anything. It has dual purposes. And the same is here with the mind. So Krishna is explaining this mind of ours. It has this dual purpose. And quite contradicting purposes. That it can become our greatest friend, and simultaneously it can become our greatest enemy. Just like we took the example of the flight. People were anxious for two opposite things, to get into the plane and get out of the plane. But what made the difference in terms of their anxiety to get in the plane? The place. Bombay made them anxious to get in the plane, and London made them anxious to get off the plane. So it was a certain third situation which was a deciding factor whether what anxiety one will be in. So over here, mind is also termed like that. It is control or uncontrol. These are the two deciding factors which will decide whether the mind is our friend, greatest friend Krishna is calling, or mind becomes our greatest enemy. And you know, in defense, we were taught that the most dangerous enemy is that enemy who comes disguised as your friend. That's the greatest enemy. If an enemy comes announcing that, yes, I am your enemy and fight with me. So that enemy is not as dangerous as that enemy which comes disguised as our friend. And mind, sometimes or most of the times in this material world, it disguises itself as our friend. Although, when it is not controlled, it is actually the greatest enemy. So, we shall try to discuss today that what are the various factors which by which we can first of all understand the nature of this mind, specifically the uncontrolled mind. Now, another beautiful verse from one of the Upanishads, I guess it is the Amrita Bindu Upanishad, which says, Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshaya bandhaya vishaya asango muktiye nirvishayam manaha. Mind is the cause of our bondage, and mind is the cause of our liberation. It's like a key. Again, key can lock something, and the same key can unlock. So mind is like that. It can bind us in this material world, and it can liberate us from this material world. So, we'll go into some of the reasons why this mind is so difficult to control, as Arjuna also corroborated in this very chapter. When Krishna is at, this is the beginning of this chapter, and Krishna is talking about Ashtanga Yoga. In fact, any yoga process, the first principle, the premise on which any yoga is established is mind control. So Arjun, after hearing all this, is saying that it's impossible for me to do that. Now, before we go into Arjun's explanation of what is the impossibility to control this mind, let us try to understand from some of the logic which we encounter in this material world in regards to this mind of ours. Do you all consider that this mind is turbulent and difficult to control? Or it's just with me? Now, as far as the mind is concerned, the first thing which is talked about the mind in our scriptures is that it is always active. There is never a time when the mind is inactive. Even when a person goes to sleep, the mind is active. The mind starts to dream about whatever the person might have thought for that day, for that week, for that month. Or sometimes you may dream about so many things which you might have never thought of, maybe in this life, which might be coming from some previous life. So many impressions the mind has, and all these impressions with the mind has, you see that these impressions, they start surface out, specifically when the body is inactive. And this is what we experience in the chanting process also. When we are sitting down, hearing and chanting, when we are doing, the body is inactive. So we have to just sit at one place. So when the body is inactive, then the mind becomes more active. And many times when the body is very much active, the mind takes the back seat. So the mind is always active. And many people, you know, they have so many questions about dreams, that what are these dreams? Prabhupada never paid much attention to dreams. He said that, you know, they are just combinations of whatever impressions we have. Like Prabhupada gave this example, in our dream we might dream of a golden flying mountain. Now there is nothing like golden flying mountain in this world, but our mind might imagine and might dream something like that. Now how is it that in our dream, we can dream something about which we have never encountered in our life? Say a golden flying mountain. So actually what happens, that the mind, it combines various impressions, specifically when one is asleep in the dream stage. So the mind has encountered a mountain. The mind might have encountered gold. The mind might have encountered a flying object, say a bird. And in our dream stage, what the mind does is combines one of the qualities of these three. The mountain, gold, and some flying object combined, then the mind projects in the dream a golden flying mountain. So which means, individually if you take those three, yes, the mind had encountered. So the mind will only project those images, those impressions, which the mind through the senses, either through the eyes or the ears or the nose or any of the senses, the mind has interacted. So because the mind is always active, this is the first reason why the mind is so difficult to control, because the mind is always active. Even if we are asleep, the body is totally, you know, like a dead log. Like, taking care of small children, you might have experienced that small children, they are always active. But you know that after some time, the small child is going to go to sleep. So which means, after some time, if the child is going to go to sleep, so you know, at least I have some peace when the child goes to sleep. So maybe at night when the child goes to sleep, or there are certain, you know, sometimes, you know, children, they have their own timings. So, you know, sometimes all through the day they are asleep and their morning program begins night 12 o'clock. You know, they are fully active. When the parents are dead tired, then the child is fully active. So imagine a child who never goes to sleep. Imagine a child who never goes to sleep. Another one, imagine Balram never goes to sleep. So if he never goes to sleep, it will be, you know, a very heavy thing on you to take care of a child who never goes to sleep. So imagine then, how is this mind which is always active, like a child who is always active 24 hours, 24 into 7 into 365. Always active. So this is one reason why the mind is difficult to control, because of its nature being very active, always being active. Secondly, another reason is that the flickering nature of the mind. Like we were discussing, bhogatyaga, the flickering nature, accepting, rejecting. And it's very annoying to actually deal with a certain entity who is indecisive. Now, again, we take the example of a child. Now, if the child wants, say, a certain toy, and you buy that toy, and then very next moment that child says, no, I want something else. And you buy that particular toy then. And the very next moment after that, the child says, no, I want, you know, this particular one. So it's something which will really annoy you. You will ask the child, you decide first which one you want. It's like, if someone is flashing a torch on you, a flashlight, and it's, you know, always on and off, doing that on your face. It's very annoying. Sometimes, in India we experience when we have those tube lights. So, in those tube lights, if the voltage is less, the electric supply is less, then you will see, the tube light like this, flickering on and off, on and off, on and off. And it's very annoying. So, what do? You switch it off. That's, little peaceful. So, if somebody is flashing light like that on and off on your face, you will say either put it on or put it off. Even if it is on, that's not so annoying as something which is just going like this flickering. So, this is the nature of the mind which we have to deal practically 24 hours. The nature of the mind is sankalpa vikalpa, accepting, rejecting, bhogatyaga. So, this is the second reason why the mind is very difficult to control because of its flickering nature. Then, thirdly, the mind is a storehouse of desires. It's like, you have a hard disk. How much you like? What is the maximum? You have in terabytes. What is 1 terabyte is like 1000 GB? Now there is pentabyte. What is that?
1000 terabyte is 1
pentabyte. That's the maximum?
Even there are more.
So you may have, like a hard disk, which is a terabyte or a pentabyte or, ultra pentabyte or whatever you may call it. So, which means so much data can be stored in a hard disk with that much capacity. Imagine the mind, how much data this mind can store in terms of desires. Like, one philosopher, he has written about the desires which we have in our mind. Kind of a poem he has written, in which he says that if you take a piece of paper, which is as big as the sky, imagine a piece of paper which is as big as the sky, and a pen which can contain as much ink as the sea can contain water in it. With that pen on that huge piece of paper, you start to write down how many desires you have. It is said that the paper will be totally filled up. The ink will be exhausted of the pen. Maybe the nib of the pen will be broken. But still there will be desires left out to jot down. So many desires. And it's not that these desires, they are very dormant. So many of these desires are always active simultaneously. So we have a stockpile of previous desires from so many lifetimes. Otherwise, how is it that immediately after our birth, we are attracted to the sense objects of this world without given any training? In animals you see, how they are attracted towards their respective sense objects. Because it is stored in the memory chip of the mind, that yes, I have enjoyed this particular sense object previously. And therefore it appears to be so natural. Just like people, they many times argue. So many of my colleagues would argue with me that why you are against the natural pleasures of this world. And you know what is that one? Sex life. So they would argue that, you know, it is so natural, you know. If it is natural, it is God's gift. So then the question is asked, what about the diseases? Are they natural? Which come out of, you know, going unrestrictedly in that particular act. So then the diseases which come out are, you know, definitely one may have natural diseases also. Like Dayamar Swami was mentioning that he was invited for a tour of one of the communes in America, some so-called spiritual commune. So this person who was giving him the tour, he was like, it was in the woods. You know, the whole commune was in the woods. And he was giving him a tour, saying that how everything over here is very much natural, which we are using. You know, we use natural organic food to eat. We use natural, hutments to live in. We use natural soaps, oils, you know. Everything is very natural and we dress naturally. Which means, you understood, we are dressed in the birthday suit, as they say, or the four directions. So we dress naturally and we associate with each other very naturally, because if we feel attracted naturally towards someone, we associate very naturally. So when he was explaining about all these naturality and natural things happening, so Devamrit Maharaj asked one question. Well, if you are saying that you are all into this natural life and you associate with each other naturally, the natural outcome should be children. I don't see any children here. And he said, we have naturally sterilized the women and we use natural contraceptives. And he was saying that this is a big hoax, you know. That if you are talking about all of these natural things, and then when the responsibility has to be taken, that is taken in such an unnatural way. So, when people talk of natural inclinations for this material world, you know, it is actually what unnaturally the mind is trying to convince to enjoy a certain particular object. And therefore, what is natural for one species is unnatural for the other species. Like for the hog, it is very natural to enjoy stool. But it's definitely, I believe, it's definitely very much unnatural for a human being. So, when we are talking of these desires, which is a stockpile already within, and which surface out, and sometimes again, the previous sense enjoyment which the living entity has done and the impressions has been stored in the mind, they surface out and they translate itself in the present species. So a soul who might have, you know, transmigrated through all of those, say, 84 million species, but then when it comes to, say, whichever species, so then the impressions of the sense gratification gets translated into that species in which the soul is right now. And the soul may not realize that how he is pulled towards certain sense objects without the soul's knowledge. In fact, it's actually the soul knowledge, but right now the soul doesn't know. The mind doesn't know. So this is the third reason, because of so many desires. And actually the desires, newer and newer desires are also forming. It's not that the old desires trouble us. Newer and newer desires keep forming in our mind. Just like if you would have asked someone, say 30 years ago, that did you have this desire to have a cell phone? Because the object was not there, the desire was not there. But now, because of the object being available, this desire has come up to have a cell phone. And this is just one example. Now there are so many examples like that. Like I remember in the villages, the children were satisfied playing with, you know, the, what do you call it, gulli dandu. You know, just, you know, hitting with the sticks. How many of you played in your childhood? So now, you know, that was like, say, one simple desire a child had that time, to play with a gilli dandu. Now, if you ask a child that, including the gilli dandu, there is another desire. You know, I want to play the gilli dandu, but in the video game. not outside somewhere. But I want to play it, you know, with those, I want to digitally play gilli dandu. So the desire has come because the objects are available. And how many objects are there available for the gratification nowadays? No end to that also. So which means how many desires they keep forming practically at every moment, every hour, every day, every week, like that. So this is the third reason why the mind is difficult to control, because of the number of desires, the innumerable desires which the mind already has and is also getting more and more. Then, a very interesting reason why the mind is very difficult to control is, the nature of the mind is that even if there is one little desire, if it is a simple desire, but when it comes in contact with the mind expands the desire like anything. It doesn't leave it with its simple nature. And there is a nice verse from the Niti Shastra which explains the nature, the expansive nature of the mind. So in this particular verse, some examples are given. And then it's connected with the mind. So it says, Jale tailam khale guhyam patre danam managapi shastre jnanam vistar vastu shaktitah. So here the examples are given. The first example is jale tailam, that you have jala, say a glass of water or a bucket of water, and you just put one drop of oil in that bucket of water. What do you see? The entire surface of the water appears oily. So you may have one bucket of water and just one drop of oil, they both come in contact, the oil expands. So oil coming in contact with water expands. The second example is khale guhyam. Khala means a crooked person. Guhya means some secret. So if you want to expand a secret, tell it to a crooked person. So, secret coming in contact with a khala expands. This is the second example given. Then, patre danam. If you are a charitable person and if you want to really expand the results of your charity, give charity to a qualified person. So, charity coming in contact with something which is qualified expands. This is the third example. Shastre jnanam, that a person who is intelligent and knowledge, when it comes in contact with a person who is intelligent, knowledge expands. Similarly, managapi vistara vastu shaktitah. Similarly, one desire coming in contact with the mind, mind expands it. Say, you become hungry and you know, you have this desire to eat something. Now, hunger created a desire to eat. Now, hunger is because of the stomach. But the mind will not relate it to the stomach. The mind will connect it with the tongue. The mind will say, don't just eat, eat the best. So then the mind will direct the other senses in order to satisfy the tongue before the stomach. So the mind will direct the legs to go out of the house to look for something which is tasty, or say some restaurant or something like that, some fast food chain. So now the legs have nothing to do with hunger. But the legs are working following the dictates of the mind. So now you see the vistara which is taking place. It had to do just with the stomach, but the legs are involved. Then the legs go, and then the mind uses the eyes to look for something which will help the tongue to satisfy its taste and the mind, and then of course the hunger. So the eyes are employed. The legs were employed, the eyes are employed now. So the eyes look for something, you know, which will satisfy that. Will locate something. And then when you go there, the mind will employ the tongue in a different way. To speak, okay, get me this particular thing to eat. So the tongue is employed, and then the hands are employed to eat that. So all of this, the mind just uses and expands it. And then when you see the menu card, the mind will tell you that don't just take anything. Select the best of the menu card. Then you know, you screen through the menu card and whatever is the best. And then the mind, whatever you get, the mind will say, don't just have little quantity, have more. So you have more of that quantity, which means you have to pay more, which means you have to work more. To earn back whatever you have paid. So it was just one simple desire, I am hungry. But when it came in contact with the mind took the whole body outside somewhere. And you know, the hands, the eyes, the tongue, the ears, everything is just focused then. And this is just one desire. It came in contact with the mind. What to speak of so many other desires. When it comes in contact with the mind is simply expanding. Just like oil gets expanded when it comes in contact with water. Secret gets expanded when it comes in contact with a crook. Shastra. Or intelligence, or sorry, knowledge comes in, expands when it comes in contact with someone who is intelligent. And of course, charity. So this is the nature of the mind. It expands, you know, any simple desire. So therefore, it is difficult. Then, we see that this mind, which Arjuna is speaking of now. So after all this, then if we look into Arjuna's explanation, when Arjuna was asked by Krishna to control his mind, and this was Arjuna 5000 years ago, mind that, 5000 years ago, Arjuna, he is giving his explanation of the impossibilities of controlling this mind. So he says, Chanchalam himana Krishna pramathi balavad dridham tasyaham nigraham manye Vayur iva sudushkaram. So Arjun in this particular verse is giving four impossibilities in controlling his mind. He begins with saying that my mind is chanchala. The mind is restless. Chanchala means restless. Now if we try to analyze the four adjectives which Arjuna uses, chanchala, pramathi, balavat and dridham. If we try to analyze these four impossibilities in the qualities of mind which Arjuna is using, he is actually sequentially going in trying to explain Krishna that because of these four qualities of the mind, don't think that this mind is something very simple to control. So let's try to understand the four impossibilities which Arjuna is using. The first he says, chanchala, restless. Now, you see, restlessness can be of two types. There is restlessness of a small child. The child cannot sit in one place and the child cannot focus on something. So, the child is very restless. So, there is restlessness of a small child, but restlessness of a small child is many times admired. You know, in India, you know, when the child grows up, then sometimes parents, they recall, when you were 2 years old, you know, you were very chanchal. And that is like kind of a admiring quality. And sometimes if the child is just, you know, gloomy face, staring at the wall, not speaking anything, the parents are concerned, you know,
Why are you not restless, active? Why are you not like ordinary, normal children? So, restlessness of a child is admired to some extent. But then when Arjuna is saying that my mind is chanchala, so Krishna might have thought that, so what, you know, chanchalata or restlessness is admired also of small children. But then Arjuna is saying, no, my dear Krishna, there is another kind of restlessness, and that is the restlessness of a madman. A madman is also very restless. If you have any time, you know, encountered a mad person, you know, you can ask Deenbandhu Prabhu. He many times encounters many mad people. So if you have encountered a mad person, he cannot sit at one place or talk one thing or focus on one thing. He is always restless. Now that restlessness of a mad person is not admired. We don't, like Deenbandhu Prabhu encounters so many mad people. He doesn't ride, you know. He is very chanchala. This mad person is very chanchal. It's okay, you can go home. You have a very nice quality of being chanchal. Now, you know, when small children, they just run around the house, you know that small child restlessness. But if a grown-up person starts running around the house, imagine when a small child has to be fed, the first morsel is like in the living room, the second morsel is in the kitchen, the third morsel is, because the child is running around. Sometimes you see, imagine the child has grown up and is behaving like that. The first morsel he takes in the living room, then runs. Second, grown up person. So that restlessness of the child is taken seriously. If a madman walks in, definitely we will be calling the police, that he starts throwing things, running around this place and all that. So Arjun, he is giving the second impossibility in order to control the mind by saying that don't think this chanchala mind is to be admired, Krishna, because it is pramathi. Pramathi means madness. So madness or mad people are actually very, very scary to associate with. So if you happen to be in a room with a mad person, it's very, very scary. This was told to us. I don't know whether it was true that one time Jawaharlal Nehru visited a mental asylum. And he visited a mental asylum, and there was, as soon as he entered the mental asylum, there was one person who was standing, he had kept a chair on a table, and he was standing on the chair and he was delivering a talk, lecture. And Jawaharlal Nehru said, what are you doing? I'm giving a speech. And he asked Jawaharlal Nehru, who are you? I said, I'm the Prime Minister of India, Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru. Come in. I also said the same thing before I came in. You are qualified. Join me behind. So, whether you are the Prime Minister or who you are, when you are dealing with mad people, madness is something very scary. So, when Arjuna is saying that my mind is chanchala, he is actually qualifying the chanchalta of his mind by telling to Krishna that it is madly restless. Not like childlike restlessness, but madly restless. Chanchalam pramathi. Now, if a person is mad, and you can curb down the madness or chanchalata or restlessness of this madman by some physical power. Like in mental asylum, if a person who is mad and starts throwing things, they have straight jackets and they can chain them and shackle them. So physical power can be used to curb down the restlessness of a madman. But imagine
if a person who is very powerful is very strong and goes mad? Like for example, an elephant. Now, you know, if a skinny, lanky person walks in this room and is mad, any one of us, you know, can slap him and sit down. But imagine an elephant goes mad, crazy on this road. Yeah? Can anyone slap an elephant? Sit down. So, the madness of an elephant becomes more scary because of what? Because of the power which it has. You see? So, madness associated with power is very fearful. So, Arjun is saying, don't think, Krishna, that this madness of mine, this restlessness with the madness is not very powerful or it's feeble. Balavat, this is the third impossibility which Arjuna is giving. So it is restless, not just restless, madly restless. It is madly restless, not just madly restless, but it is powerfully madly restless. And sometimes you may have, you know, a person with some problem and he may be powerful and all of that also. But sometimes logic and reasoning can make the person understand the person's mistake or get over some problem. You know, like, you know, if some patient visits a psychiatrist. So the psychiatrist tries to give some logic and reasoning. You know, like there is also this therapy, hypnosis. So hypnosis is like you dictate, you know, a certain situation, and a person, he tries to go into a certain trance or a certain different realm and like that. So hypnosis works on, you know, say dictations and taking a person with some logic reasoning. But what if the person is stubborn and obstinate? You cannot work your hypnosis therapy on an obstinate person. Am I right? If a person is stubborn, no hypnosis will work. So here in Arjuna is giving the fourth impossibility. Dridham. That my mind is not only powerfully, madly restless, but it is stubborn. Obstinately, powerfully, madly restless. So that is what Arjuna is speaking in this verse. Chanchalam hi mana Krishna pramathi balavat dridham. And Arjuna, after speaking of the impossibility to control this mind, is giving an example. Just like, you know, in our lectures when we give examples, it makes the point really drill through the mind. So Arjuna is also giving an example. It's like icing on the cake of the impossibility to control the mind. So he is saying, Tasyaham nigraham manye vayur iva sudushkaram. If you ask me to control a tornado or a hurricane, I can do that, Krishna. A raging wind I can control. Now, who can control, you know, what to speak of raging wind? Even ordinary wind, can we control with our physical senses? Arjuna is saying, I can do that, Krishna, but I can't control my mind. Now, I was thinking about this example which Arjuna is using, controlling a raging wind. And let us try to compare it with mind. Say, let us take a hurricane. Now, a hurricane has certain velocity at which it goes, a certain speed. Say, a hurricane has a speed of 1000 miles per hour. So, in 1 hour, the hurricane will go 1000 miles, or 1000 miles, it will take 1 hour at least. Now, if you compare the speed of the mind with a hurricane, what is the speed of the mind? In order to travel 1000 miles, how much time the mind will take? Fraction of a moment. So we are sitting here, like I am sitting here in Manchester, which is like thousands and thousands of miles away from Bombay. And if my mind starts thinking of Bombay, within a fraction of a moment, the mind has reached Bombay. So it is said, this is the power of the mind. that what to speak of Manchester to Bombay, this mind is so powerful that it can cross through all the layers of this material world and it can reach the spiritual world at the lotus feet of Krishna. That is the power of this mind. So if you have, you know, a race of the mind with a hurricane, you know, a hurricane might have certain velocity, but mind supersedes. Far behind the mind will leave this hurricane. So therefore, you know, Arjuna, and you know, a hurricane when attacks someone can kill someone on a physical level, but uncontrolled mind can destroy someone's spiritual practice. So in that sense, because of these two reasons, the speed as well as its power of destruction, the mind is more powerful than a raging wind. So when Arjun is going on with these impossibilities, and what was Arjun's background? If you look into Arjun's background, the kind of control he had over his mind, it is seen in Mahabharata. When Arjun went to Indraloka to collect the celestial weapons, Indra sent Urvashi, that Urvashi should go and satisfy Arjun, because Arjun was intently looking at Urvashi when Urvashi was dancing. So Indra thought that maybe Arjun is interested in Urvashi. And Urvashi, if you know anything about Urvashi, Urvashi was born from the Supreme Lord himself. When, you know, Kamadev went to disturb Narnarayan Rishi, so from the thighs, Uru means thighs in Sanskrit, you know, and therefore we also say a laptop is called Urvashi also, because, you know, on the lap when you keep, so on top of the lap means Urvashi. So Urvashi was born from the thighs of Narayan Rishi, which means what kind of beauty. In fact, Kamadev, with all of the beauties of Kamadev, tried to disturb Nar Narayan Rishi, and all of these beauties, they looked like, you know, some grotesque figures in front of Urvashi. And Narayan Rishi said that, take this and, you know, offer one to Indra from my side. You came to disturb my mind, you know, I give one donation for Indra. Take this. Indra was very happy to have Urvashi, you know. At least, you know, got something. You know, I was expecting a curse, but, you know, got Urvashi. So Urvashi was the number one beauty queen of the heavens. You know, you could call the Miss Universe, or, you know, whatever, Miss Brahmanda, like that. So that was Urvashi. And Urvashi comes herself offering to Arjun. And Arjun, looking at Urvashi, pays his dandavats and calls her, "Oh my dear mother." And that, you know, really, like, you know, one time we were distributing books, and this was at one of the railway stations in Bombay. So I was there at the stall, and one very young girl came. She must be in her 20s, like 19 years old or 20 years old. So I was, she was asking about Bhagavad Gita and what, and in my conversation I just addressed her Mataji. And she stopped the conversation, looked at me. You addressed me, Mataji? So I said, yeah, because we address everyone. How dare, you know, I'm just 19 years old, you call me Mataji. You know? She was so annoyed. So I said, you know, potentially you are a Mataji. So Arjun called Urvashi Mataji, like that, you know. And Urvashi became so angry that, you know, she cursed Arjun that, you know, that you become an impotent eunuch. Of course, that turned out to be a benediction. One year they were in exile, Agyatavas, and that particular curse of Urvashi, Arjun could use it. So Arjun was, you know, of that caliber that he could control his senses, his mind, in front of such a sense object like Urvashi. And here Arjun is telling to Krishna that Chanchalam Pramathi Balavandridam. So if we read in Kali Yuga now that verse and understand it was Arjuna Uvacha, Arjun spoke that. So what hopes do I have? I'll, you know, better close the Gita, and maybe if Krishna's mercy is on me, then maybe I'll do something. In fact, if you read the next verse after that, it's even more appearing to be discouraging, the first two lines of that. When Arjuna said all of that, you know what was Krishna's reply? Asamshayam tu mahabaho mano durni graham chalam. Asamshayam, without doubt, Arjuna, whatever you are saying is absolutely right. So, you know, if we really want to just give in to our mind's desires, you might say, wow, Krishna is saying now. So that's it. Final authority. Krishna is saying to Arjun, without any doubt, asamshayam, mahabaho. He's calling Arjuna mahabaho. You mahabaho, what you are speaking about, your, you know, all-powerful Arjuna with powerful shoulders, what you are speaking about your mind is true. Mano durni graham chalam. This mana is dur nigraha. Nigraha means to control. Dur nigraha. It is definitely very, very difficult to control. But he doesn't say impossible. It's difficult, yes, but not impossible. So what is the way out? Abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena cha grihyate. Two things. We have to do only two things. Abhyasa, practice. Vairagya, detachment. If we practice these two principles, Abhyasa and Vairagya, Krishna is saying, we can easily control this Chanchala, Pramathi, Balavan and Dridham mind. Now, let us practically try to understand now that how we can translate these two remedies in ISKCON, in our sadhana bhakti. Now, when we sit for hearing and when we sit for chanting, that is the time when we experience the chanchalata of the mind or the all the other, you know, adjectives of the mind. When we sit for a class, you know, or when we sit with our bead bag, the mind tells, you know, okay, now 2 hours or 1 hour you are going to just sit in front of this person, or you are going to sit with your bead bag. I am going for a stroll. So the mind tells, you know, and the mind starts to go so many places. Do you all experience that? That the body is in the temple room in front of Panchatattva. But the ears are also, the sound vibration is going in the ears, maybe sometimes here and there. But the mind is just reeling all over UK, all over the planet, you know, surfing. So this is one obstacle we experience in terms of hearing and chanting. It's called vikshepa, distraction. So we are distracted. The mind distracts us in order to get absorbed. So this is one obstacle. The second obstacle, if it's not distraction, the second obstacle which we face during our hearing and chanting is laziness or laya. We go to sleep. So either it is vikshepa or it is laya. I was reading one Subhashit. Subhashit are like, you know, Sanskrit compositions. So this was one Subhashit I was reading, which said, Nidra hate preyasi kumbhakarne vaidhavya diksham vyatite tathakem shrotrim katha yati katha puranam na gramya gitam vividhaiva gitam. So this verse says that when Kumbhakarna's wife died, when Kumbhakarna died, who was the wife of Kumbhakarna? Nidra Devi. All of you know Kumbhakarna.
the glorious brother of Ravana. So when Kumbhakarna was killed by Ram, so the wife of Kumbhakarna, Nidra Devi, she became Vaidhavya Vidva. She became a widow. And she wanted to remarry. So when she wanted to remarry, first she went to those people, those men who were engaged in Gramya Katha. You know, gossiping, worldly talk, all Prajalpa. So she was expecting that one of these men will marry those who are engaged in Prajalpa. So when Nidra Devi approached these people, they just threw her out. Because in our Prajalpa, there is no question that we are going to sleep. So then, it is said that she came to a place where Katha was going on. Shrotrim Katha Yati Katha Purana. Some Hare Krishna lecture was going on. And when Nidra Devi came to a Hare Krishna lecture, practically everyone in the audience welcomed with three Hari Bols. Please, we were waiting. So, lala or laziness or feeling sleepy during hearing and chanting is the second obstacle which we face. And you know, many times sitting on the Vyasasana, come to know the level of eyelids, you know, in the audience. So now if we take these two obstacles and we try to analyze what are the reasons why these two obstacles come, and look into the two remedies which Krishna has given. It's perfectly Krishna has given practice and detachment. So vikshepa of the mind takes place only because of attachment. Because the mind will only think or get diverted to those situations, people or objects which the mind is attracted towards. Like if I ask you, any time in your hearing and chanting, have you experienced that your mind was troubled because it was distracted thinking of the penguins of Antarctica? Did you experience any time that you are troubled, you know, penguins of Antarctica, Hare Krishna, penguins of Antarctica? Did you find difficulty because of those thoughts? Because you might have never encountered, you know, thinking about penguins of Antarctica. So your mind will not get distracted to these far out things, you know. But definitely your mind will be distracted about your foot right now which is paining. Or your mind will be distracted about, you know, the wonderful prasad you are missing out, you know. Because of so many reasons, maybe. So, mind, vikshep will take place only because of attachment. So, therefore, Krishna gives, what is the weapon against vikshep? Vairagya. And how do we translate in our ISKCON sadhana? Four regulative principles. So, that vairagya which Krishna is talking about is what Prabhupada has given us, the four regulative principles. Now, we see that, of course, when we are sitting for chanting and when we are hearing, physically we are not engaging in breaking of the any principles. But still, why do we not get absorbed in Krishna Katha when we are hearing, or in the chanting when we are doing our japa? Because of the other anartha, that is laya. And laya means laziness. So laziness or sleepiness occurs because of lack of attraction, lack of attachment towards Krishna. Vikshepa is because of too much attachment towards sense gratification or any sense object. And laziness or laya is because of lack of attraction towards Krishna. Now you see, a sense enjoyer
will never sleep in the sense gratificatory activity. And a pure devotee will never sleep in his hearing and chanting. But we are somewhere in between. Because physically we are not engaging in sense gratification, but mentally we are not 100% absorbed in Krishna. So we are somewhere in between. And here in, you know, Prabhupada writes in one of the purports of this chapter, the mind has to obey superior dictation, either Krishna or Maya. So because we are stuck up in between, go to sleep. You know, like some of our cricket fans in India. These cricket fans, even if the cricket match which is going on, which is being telecast night 2 o'clock, you know, in our temple we have one brahmachari who was telling me once that he was such a fan of this cricket game before coming to Krishna consciousness, that sometimes, you know, these matches played, you know, in the Western world, the timings would be that Indian time would be night, midnight or 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, like that. So he really, you know, was like from a simple village of South India. So he didn't have, you know, alarms and everything like that. But still he was so much attached to watching cricket. So the way he would make sure that he would get up, it was something very interesting. You know, in the evening he would drink a lot of water. So by, you know, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, he had to get up to attend to nature's call. And, you know, he could watch. So, like, you know, I was thinking, we perform Nirjala Ekadashi to have Krishna's mercy. So he was performing Sajala. Drinking too much water to have the mercy of the cricket game. So, if you, you know, have these cricket fans, you know, watching their cricket game, even if it is night 2 o'clock, with unblinking eyes, they'll be glued to the television screen. And just like, you know, gopis cursed Brahmaji, why did you fashion these eyes that they blink? So they must be also cursing Lord Brahma. Why did you fashion these eyes that I blinked it and, you know, I missed one ball. So a person who is fully into sense gratification will never sleep in that activity. Like sometimes we experience also, you know, our favorite activity in our sadhana bhakti is prasadam. And I guess there are some people who say that they went to sleep while taking prasadam also. But I have never come across anyone, you know, like, you know, you have the feast in front of you. You know, wonderful feast, like, you know, our Dinbandhu Prabhu has prepared nice pav bhaji tonight. Is it really pav bhaji still? The same menu? So, imagine you having the pav bhaji and, you know, you take the first morsel and you doze off. Does it happen? So, when we are into a certain kind of enjoyment, you know, when we are really attracted to that, we never go to sleep. And a pure devotee who is fully into Krishna's bliss, Krishna prem, pure devotee will never sleep. And we are in between, so therefore, we go to sleep. So what is the remedy for laziness, for that laya? Abhyasa. Because by constant practice, we get attached to certain things. Just like a smoker, the first time he starts smoking, the lungs rebel. You know, he just starts coughing. But then he keeps smoking, you know. He realizes, well, everyone is enjoying, you know, why I am coughing. So he again tries the second one, third one. So the more he does the abhyas of smoking, the more he becomes attached to that. You know, so it's like that, you know. Like, we have some South Indians, you know, if you go into the South Indian family, you know, they love to eat rice, idli, all these kind of South Indian things. And if you go into the North,
you know. Over there, you know, they will be liking all those North Indian kinds, you know, paratha, chapati, roti and paneer and all that. Because they have been habituated now, the tongue is habituated to that. So therefore, by constantly having it again and again and again, the taste develops. So, when we are talking of abhyasa or practice, how do we develop taste for Krishna? By chanting more and more and more, again and again and again, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Like Rupa Goswami gives the example of the jaundiced tongue. What is the remedy for a jaundiced tongue? Sugar cane juice or sugar candy. So the more, and it tastes bitter. So yes, Hare Krishna initially might taste bitter. And what happens when we, you know, in sadhana bhakti, many times, you know, early in the morning, if this thought crosses our mind, 16 rounds, every bead appears to be like a huge load. And you know, one round over, and you look at the counting, 15 left, my God. So many times, you know, it appears like climbing a huge Himalayan mountains, and Himalayan mountains would be easier. But 16 rounds, and therefore many times we say also to each other, you know, I have finished my rounds today. So rather than saying that I chanted my rounds, we use the statement, I finished my rounds. Finished, you know. Never to see this bead back now for the whole day. So, and many times we go in ecstasy, you know, when the head bead is coming, you know. Sometimes, you know, like when I was told to chant, and I was given the mala. So, I was told to chant, you know, you should chant Hare Krishna. So, I just chanted one time the Maha Mantra. I chanted. No, you should chant, use a mala and whole round you should chant. So when the mala was given, you know, my God, I couldn't find the end, where it begins, where it ends. And then start chanting, and I was told that, you know, when the head bead comes, that makes one mala. So I remember my initial rounds, you know, I was going, and sometimes take it out from the bead bag, where is it, you know, where is the head bead? And the ecstasy is, when the head bead is so closer, now, yes, finishing this one. What to speak? The ecstasy we feel, the head bead, the last bead of the 16th round. But it is said that the test that we have really chanted or we have finished our rounds. The difference between these two. Whether we have finished our rounds or whether we have chanted our rounds. The difference is, how much are you eager to chant the 17th round? So, when we are talking of practice abhyasa, so that abhyasa gives us attachment, the taste for the Supreme Lord. And therefore, when Krishna is saying, abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena cha grihyate, just by these two remedies, if we apply, by vairagya, that is chanting, following the four principles and chanting 16 rounds. Srila Prabhupada said, if you just do these two things, chant 16 rounds and follow the four principles, Prabhupada said, you will surely go back home, back to Godhead. And that is what herein we understand. Of course, mind is, you know, you can speak, give a seminar, a 1-2 hour seminar on the mind. But the mind is such that while a person is giving the seminar, while the person is receiving the seminar, sometimes both the parties, the mind might be experiencing chanchala, pramathi and all of that. So, yes, as we were discussing, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur said, beating the mind with broomstick 100 times in the morning, beating the mind with shoe 100 times in the evening. And that is, of course,
engaging the mind always in these wonderful processes. Therefore, it's so easy in Kali Yuga because the Supreme Lord has given a positive process. Neti, neti, neti is one process which the yogis, they have to practice. Na iti, everything is negative. Negations and negations. Herein, we just keep adding, keep adding, keep adding. Like, you know, I'll just conclude with one, this example, which I was talking to Subhash Prabhu. So, you know, we see in India, when you go to a grocery store, if you order for, say, 1 kilo of rice, so, you know, they have that measuring scale. So, on one side, they put rice, on the other side, they put, you know, some measurements. So, there were two businessmen, and both had opened a grocery store, individually, their own grocery store. One was very successful, but the other, was his business was really going down. So the one whose business was going down, he inquired from his, you know, adjacent neighbor, friend, how is it that your business is flourishing? We have the shops, the same location. We sell the same products. Why is it that more people come to your shop and less people or hardly anyone comes to my shop? So this one who was successful in his business, he said, I'll tell you why it's happening. You see, when any customer comes to your shop, I have seen that, see, when he's ordering or asking for, say, a kilo of rice. So what you do is you put more rice than a kilo. And then you start taking in order to measure it. In order to balance it with 1 kilo, you start removing. So the psychology is that you are giving less. The customer psychology is he's giving me less. But when any customer comes to me, what I do is first I put less. And then I keep adding, you know, to measure it. I'm only giving 1 kilo. But the psychology of the customer is, oh, he's giving me more. He keeps adding, you know. Keeps adding, keeps adding. So that is what we have to do in Krishna consciousness. Keep adding, you know, Krishna. Keep adding Krishna in any of our activities. Keep, you know, in any of the thoughts which we have or consciousness. Keep adding Krishna like that. And then the psychology will be that, yes, a Krishna conscious lifestyle is not taking away the pleasures from my life. But I am adding, adding, adding. Hare Krishna. Any questions anyone has? There was a question, but the mind was somewhere else. Do you what?
The ten offenses.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, holy names.
Mm-hmm.
What are practicalities
of that in relation? It's a lecture in itself. Exactly. If I begin now with the ten offenses, it's a big subject matter to discuss. Yeah.
You do that tomorrow.
Yeah, we can discuss tomorrow. Yeah.
Why you have been given such a mind?
So that, see, the mind. Therefore, when the mind is controlled, it has that same intensity to be attracted towards Krishna as it is now attracted towards sense gratification. Prabhupada gave the example of electricity. Same electricity passed through a refrigerator, cools. Same electricity passed through a radiator, heats. You know. So the electricity is the same. The intensity is the same. It depends on what appliance you are using. So the mind has got this intensity, and therefore, when pure devotees speak of their mind, Savai Mana Krishna Padaravinda Yor, Ambarish Maharaj is speaking, that my mind is always attracted towards the lotus feet of Krishna. You see? So, you know, if Ambarish Maharaj is asking this question, that why this mind is designed in such a way that it is attracted towards Krishna?
It's good. You know, the problem is with us. You know, so what the impersonalist people, what they do is, they want to just negate and kill the mind. Like if you go to a doctor with a boil, you know, there is a boil on the hand, you go to a doctor and the doctor says, remove the hand. No hand, no boil. Or if the patient tells to the doctor, doctor, why do I have a hand? If I wouldn't have had this hand, there wouldn't have been a boil. So, you know, there is this class of people who say cut the hand. And then there is the karmakanda process. You know, they say that don't get rid of the root of the problem, but just patch it up from the surface level. So, like if you go to this doctor and this doctor says, this boil is paining, blow on it. And you know, the doctor blows and says, feels good? Yeah, feels very good. Keep blowing. So you have now, you know, these kind of people, the karmakandis, who say, keep blowing, you know, you have some disease, keep blowing it. You feel good for a while. That's it, you know. What do you want? You want to feel good. But if you go to a real doctor, what he will do is, he will treat the blood, which is impure. He will go to the root of the problem. You see, not cut the hand, not keep blowing on it, but purify the blood. So we have to not remove the mind out of this, you know, our skull or something like that, and say that, get rid of this. No, we have to purify it. Okay, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We have Kirtan. Kirtan? Yes. The front of law because the person.